So we left off yesterday talking about the question of whether it's appropriate to compel. Basically, let's say you have two equal plots of land, and one brother wants the plot that's adjacent to where he already has investment. And apparently, theoretically, he can compel his other brothers to give him the part that's adjacent. So under what circumstances? So according to Rashi, and according to the Rambam also, if the fields are currently totally equal, so then he is able to compel them. But according to some of the other Rishonim, such as Tosfos, that if it turns out that they can claim that, why don't you pay us for this extra increase? So then they should have the right to do that without being called stomites. And we discussed yesterday how that probably fits into a broader picture of what the issue is. Is the issue of stoma midos issue that we're told not to be mean, essentially, and maybe that includes not exploiting the situation for even for some extra profit, which, even though it's understandable that you want extra money, but you're basically exploiting this person's situation, your brother's situation, and that is not something that we would want to encourage. While if we basically see it as more just kind of a Chosha Mishpat kind of right, so then it would have to really mean that there's absolutely nothing at stake for the other guy. So even their potential to profit by charging you more, that would be considered something at stake, and therefore they have the right to charge you more. And that was the view of Tosfos. It's also interesting to note is that the view of Tosfos and also the Rush, which is a little bit of a stira, or a lot of a stira, to the Rush and his Chuvus. We mentioned yesterday that the Rush and his Chuvus wrote that included in Kofa Amidah Stom is to give up that extra profit, and we put him on that side. But the Rush and his Psakim here is on the side of Tosfos, that one can charge extra. So that's an interesting question, how to reconcile that, but just for the record. So that's essentially how it seems to play out. So perhaps this has to do with the question of whether it's a general kind of midos idea, where we're probably going for a somewhat higher standard, or whether it's basically a momonos principle. And this ties in also to the question that we mentioned before, but just now to expand that a little bit. So as far as the sugya in Bava Kamma, which ties in here also, where we find that if somebody lived on somebody else's property and the guy finds, the owner finds out about it afterwards and wants to charge him, so he can't charge him because Zainanev is Elo Chazer. But what about beforehand? Can he stop him from living in the property? Right. So we saw that was a machlokis Rishonim, that according to the majority of Rishonim, he can stop him. According to Tosfos, and more explicitly the Nebuk Yosef, quoting a bunch of other Rishonim, here again the Rush, and the Ra'ah, and a bunch of others, the Ritva, he can say that you can't come into my property without my Rishos, and some of the Achronim explained that that is perhaps part of the definition of bailus, though there is a chisar in there if you want to violate that bailus. While there was a minority view that nonetheless seemed to be the way of the Ramah Paskin, that the view of the Mordechai, that unless it's monetizable, you actually can go in without the person's rishus, against the person's rishus. And essentially, this is an example of Zanene, the Zelo Chaser, and Kofan Al Midas Dom, even against the person's ownership, which is quite an extreme idea. And the only time the person can stop you is if it's something which theoretically he could be monetizing, even if he's not actually monetizing it, but it's theoretically something he could be monetizing. So then he could stop you. So far, so good. Everybody with me? So the fact that the Ramah seems to take this view of the Mordechai was surprising to the Beis Ephraim and others, both because it seems to be against the view of the majority of Rishonim, and probably also because of its practical implications. And with the how the Rishonim expressed that it seems like it's really going to get in the way of any real concept of ownership. So it's also an interesting question, how does this relate to our sugya in Bava Basra? Because theoretically, one could say it's a little bit overlapping, depending on how you understand our sugya. Because essentially, is this what the brother is doing when he's telling the other brothers, you have to give me your right to, let's say, according to Rashi and the Rambam, they have the brother who already has the investment says, you have to give me the part that I want, and you have to give up your rights to have a lottery and possibly win it yourself. So is that the same view as Mordechai? Does it line up that way? Just to arrange it here, that basically, according to the Mordechai, if you don't have any potential profit, I can say to you, you have to let me live in your house against your will. So what about here, if the person wants to say, give me the land that I want, which right now you have the ability to possibly win in the lottery, but you have to give it to me. Is that comparable?
Well, according to Rashi, no, because there is a potential for future profit.
But still you have to give it to me. Maisa.
What?
But at some point we still say you have to give it to me. Right, so everyone agrees there is a state, there is a level where your brother is going to have a time. Right, there is, after we iron out all the differences, there is some point where the invested brother, I guess that's the easiest way to say it, can say, you have to give me the part that's profitable for me. So being that the other brothers have some stake here, they have the ability to win in a lottery. So is that comparable to saying you have to let me live in your house? Right?
Didn't say yesterday, in that, do you view this, the brother who wants the land, that desire which would increase the value, do you view that as substantial enough to allow you to withhold the property? I mean, to keep the property? Or is it, since it's uniquely his and it doesn't really affect the market value, then you don't really have a claim on the...
Yeah, we did see those machlokes about that point, about whether you can jack up the price. Right? But according to the other Rishonim, that you can't. Let's say according to Rashi and the Rambam, that if it's really equal. But according to Rashi and the Rambam, basically, if we can get to the point where we iron out all these tainas, and basically it's really equal. So then, like says the Rambam, the Hilchos Shchinim, Perek Yubeis, Halach Aleph, and then they got to give it. So is that comparable to the owner of the residence having to turn over his place to let this guy live in?
Well, then we mentioned that the possible chilek would be in the case of, I guess, house, the guy owns the property already. In this case, by the field, neither of the brothers really owns it yet. It's just up for debate.
Right, so that's true. So the Tosus does mention that difference, right? So there is certainly that, but what about... On the one hand, the brother who's asking for something has his own chelek that he's asking for, so he's more in it already. He's not just trying to take somebody else's stuff. But the other brothers are being asked to give up something. They're being asked to give up their shot at winning it. So is that like giving up?
Right, I guess in the case by where the guy actually owns the house already, meaning like he's giving something up and he like fully has rights to it. So there, I think it's way more reasonable to say like that that's pretty extreme. Whereas here, I guess, I guess also they're giving something up somewhat, but they don't really own it yet, so they're not fully giving something physical and tangible up that they had already previously owned.
So it's interesting, what you're sensing here is that you could draw a comparison, but basically it's a matter of degree.
Yeah, I guess.
Because right, he's like, Tosfos over here quotes the Ritzvah, who says that really, here there's a Takanas Chachamim in this case. In other words, like there really is something to wonder about here. They are giving up something, but for whatever reason, it's not clear why, but Chazal made a takara saying that they're going to have to ultimately give in. But maybe it is a matter of degree, you know, essentially, that this is not real ownership. This is not real. It's not a real thing. It's one thing to let somebody live in my house, But to say, okay, yes, I could have had a shot at winning this, and now I'm giving that to you, so that's not really giving up something. Even though, yes, it's giving up something, but it's not a thing. Which, if you see the issue of living in the house as a contradiction to Bilus, so it doesn't really transfer over here. But it's interesting to note, there are a couple of related machlokasin that also skirt the edges of this issue. So, for example, we saw when we were looking at the earlier sugyas that the Rambam maintains that if you want to put a small ladder up against somebody's wall that you can easily move if needed, you want to put the ladder up against your neighbor's wall, so you're allowed to do that because it's essentially kofen al midas dom. It's not a big deal, and he has to allow you. And the tour disagreed with that. The tour said, how can you use somebody's property without his rishos? So it seems like there is a kind of similar issue here, basically, that do we have this across-the-board rule that you can never compel somebody to let them use, yet you use their property? Or is there some point where it's really zenen of zelo chaser, where that even overrides property rights? And similarly, the tour quotes for the Rimi Barzaloni, which the psak even sounds surprising. If you have their neighbor across the chatzer and you want to put a little hook in their wall that's less than a tefach, in a way that's not going to weaken the wall and it's not going to block anything for them. So the Rimi Barzaloni says you can do that. And the tour, once again, says, what are you talking about? How could you do that? How could you use somebody else's wall without their rishus? So it seems also that there you have this same machlokas happening. Basically, do we say that zanana v'zelo chaser does not apply when it involves using somebody else's property? Or do we say that it could even transcend that, as long as there is some case you can make that there really is no disarin happening? Which does, you know, seem to kind of make us nervous, because the question is, how far are you going to go with that? And how much are we going to trust? It's clearly a slippery slope, and it's dangerous territory, because you have to trust the other guy that there really is no chisarim. And you can see why that would make owners nervous. So, for example, the Shulchan Aruch paskins against this Rimi Barzaloni. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that the person can't do this against your will. So Pashtus of the Shulchan Aruch is paskining like the majority of you in Rishonim, that you just can't compel other people to let them use your property. The Sma over there writes that the person could kind of, I don't believe you, that you're not messing up my wall. They think you are messing up my wall. So there's always going to be that element, which kind of just makes it more of a metzias issue. And there's a practicality point, which I think is also invoked in the Rishonim here, just as a part of the reality of it. So this issue is being fought out both on the conceptual level and on the practical level. The conceptual level of just, is there some absolute right if there is no chisaron? And then there's the sticky reality of establishing that there actually isn't a chisaron in the first place, which itself becomes a confounding issue. So how does all this relate to the p'tur of paying in the case in Bava Kamma? So this is itself also an issue that needs clarification. So we know that the Gemara says over there on the Chaf Mebeis in Bava Kamma that the person who makes use after the fact, the person made use of somebody's empty house, so you can't make him pay because of Zenana Vizelo Chasar. Because, yes, he benefited, but the owner didn't actually lose anything. So is that the same din as Kofen Al Midas Dom, or is it just using the same language? So there is some ambiguity here. So Tosfos connected the two, but really just to bring up the other issue of whether you could have forced the owner to let you live there l'chavchila. But the fact that you're pater after the fact, is that because of kofen al midas dom? So kofen al midas dom, is that automatically the same thing? Which basically goes to our question, is that basically to create the patur mamonos? Is that the idea? Or is that a separate midos idea? So the Pnei Yoshua, in his commentary to Baba Kama, he says that's the reason. The reason that there's a patur of Zenene Vezelo Chaser is because it's kofen al midas dom, so you're patur. But other Achronim say differently. And other Achronim say, similar to what we said in the past when we were learning the Sugya of Nene, right? If you recall then, we discussed that it came from the other direction. That really there is a chiyuv to pay for Hana. But when there's no chisaron, so then that doesn't qualify as Hana. So if that's the case, it's not really a kofen al midas dom issue. And under those circumstances, I think they would have a difference. So there's a number of Achronim who assert that it's because it doesn't rise to the level of Tashlumin because of the lack of Chisaron. And some maintain that maybe really there is a Chiyuv, but there's a general assumption that people are mochel in such case, right? Especially when you put it together with the other details of Kaimel Agra and the like. So this is the kind of service that people sometimes would pay for in other contexts. So people pay for lodging overall. And here, this person isn't generally a hotel. He doesn't generally charge. So then maybe the assumption is that he's mochel because he's not been in this business because of the lack of chisaron. But it's not really that there's no chiyuv there at all. So what's a nafkamina? I think there is a significant nafkamina. What if, let's say, the person who lived there, let's say he decides he wants to offer to pay. Is there anything wrong with that?
Was he saying, I'm going to pray Lamafre or I'm going to pay on going?
No, Lapay Lamafre. After the fact, he says, listen, I'm aware, I learned Bava Kama. I know I'm not a chayev. But no, I appreciate the fact that I stayed there. I want to pay.
So you can just construe it as a matana. What's the problem?
Well, yeah. Well, maybe.
I guess the most, quote-unquote, extreme opinion. I can't remember his name, but we quoted someone before when we were talking about, like, the Uber case.
Yeah.
According to him, it wouldn't seem like it would be problematic.
Well, I may have quoted somebody who thought it was problematic, right? I think.
No, what I'm saying, so here it would seem like you would also think
it would be problematic.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Rabbi Levi, Zichron Lebracha, my Rabbi, so he took the position that it's not right even to accept voluntary payment for these things.
So even as matan.
Yeah, that basically the association with kofen al midas dom is essentially saying that it's completely against Jewish values. That this is repugnant, basically. And therefore, you should not want to take the money at all. It's just completely inappropriate. So I always found that a little bit troubling, because first of all, just I mean, hold my dog, but just I think it's just first of all, it's coming from a different place because I guess it doesn't involve the same achzarius in this case. It's just a desire for money, so it's not the same kind of repugnant midas dom that we find in other places. So it's easier to say that this is not so completely against Jewish value to say, I don't want you to benefit no matter what, even though it makes no difference to me. So that's completely against Jewish values. But a person who wants to profit, again, without, I don't want to sound like an anti-Semitic stereotype, but a person wants to profit, even without the stereotype.
He even say he wants his pound of flesh.
Right. And that doesn't want his pound of flesh, because that, the pound of flesh is, you know, Zen Evelochos, so what do you get from a pound of flesh, right? That's the point. There you just want the other guy to suffer. That's what the pound of flesh represents. But if you want money, so that's kind of normal. It's not maybe ideal, but it's not cruel, per se. Yeah.
Can you not make the claim that even though it's Zen and Bezelo Chaser, there is still the conception in Judaism of, you know, Akar Satov, and in the case of where I stay by somebody's house without having to pay, expressing my Akar Satov might count monetarily, in which case, for caring so much about the mitos, you know, I have mitos as the owner of the property, but you also have mitos as the other guy, so why do we care so much about my mitos and not the other guy's mitos?
Yeah, I think there is a value to that also, and you can get into the whole yisod of Akar Satov, that even the guy didn't even know he was doing you a favor. So you might think, why should you be so grateful? Because there is such an inyan of Akar Satov, even when the person is not doing it knowingly. So I could buy that too. But even here, just from the Kofan Midas Dom, I have serious reservations whether we're really applying Kofan Midas Dom here on a couple levels. Because first of all, even if we say that Kofan Midas Dom is involved, so A, we think it's not the same level as the cases where you're just trying to hurt the other person. But B, it may not even be that midah at all. Maybe it's what we're talking about where you're bringing the midah into the ikar hadin, so the person's not chayiv. But it's not repugnant necessarily. It doesn't maybe involve the midah at all. And third of all, I'm not sure that it's even kofan al midah stone to begin with. So the Pnei Yeshua says it is, but others don't. You know, maybe it just, it's coming from a different direction. It's coming from assessing that, and it uses the same language, but it's not necessarily really the same concept. Shmuel, you want to say something?
Isn't that the problem we've had all along, that Zen and Vezelo Chaser is not, it being Kofan Yastom is not in the Gemara, it's a Rishon.
Right, so how, where exactly they relate and where they don't relate and how they connect and they don't connect is...
Where is the Venn diagram on one end and on the other?
Yeah, so it's the whole sugya is a little confusing, right? Because we have the phrase only appearing in the Mishnah, only appearing in Avos, and the idea of Zen Nevzal Chaser and Midas Dom never appearing in Chazal in the same place, only Rishonim connecting them, and it leaves us with quite a puzzle to know exactly how they relate and how they don't relate. And it's interesting that the Sholem Meshiv, who we've quoted a few times, he has a tshuva where he says, and this other poskim found this shocking, I guess, because it seems to contradict the Yesodos to the Gemara, but he writes that a person in this position of Zedna Nevzelo Chaser, let's say, with the squatting in someone's house, says, should pay lots of Sedei Shamayim. I mean, it basically, he's not going to be compelled to pay in Beis Din, but he does have a obligation to pay, a moral obligation to pay. So that's itself interesting. And I think that might reflect the fact that it's not, that there's really no connection here at all to any obligation. It's just, technically speaking, there's no obligation under these circumstances. It doesn't rise to the level of a chargeable hana, of a monetizable hana. But especially if the recipient is machshivit as a hana, you know, this is something I would have paid for. So then, all the more so, maybe it should be considered a hana.
I think that's the question we keep on bumping into in Kofan Mian Stone, which is sort of like, I guess, not just a meta question in terms of halacha, but a meta question in terms of all legal systems, is it the role of law to enforce, you know, the highest standard of morals?
Right.
Which is, it's not clear in our sugya at all, you know, where the line is. Sometimes we care a lot, sometimes we don't care a lot.
Yeah, and that's also a question, what do you mean by kofa? So in the Shuvas Rashbash, he says, when we talk about kofa in Almidas Dom, we mean literally kofa, the same way a bezin is kofa. It means physically being kofa, putting somebody into cherem. So if we're talking about the midah, it's really quite a a shocking idea. So there is a lot to figure out. We're looking to see that his article also raises the question, essentially, you know, is this a din in the nene or a din in the mechusar, the not mechusar? You know, that basically when we're kofa, so are we kofa to serve the needs of the person who is receiving, or are we kofa to address the moral needs of the person who should be serving? And he says, for example, let's say the person involved is a katan. So if he's a katan, so then presumably if we're worried about his character, it's not necessarily our job to be kofa him. But if we're talking about a benefit that we think is due people, because that's how we structure society, so then even in the case of a katan, we would be kofa. So all of this, all of these questions of just how far we go with it, for example, these issues of could we even make somebody be compelled to allow others to use their property, they do seem to relate to this overall issue of whether it is a midah or a principle of mamonos. And it brings us back again to interpreting the Mishnah in Avos. Rav Nosson Gestetner, in his commentary on Pirkei Avos, he thought that maybe the machlokas about whether it was beinoni or stone, shali shali v'shalcha shalcha, he thought maybe that was essentially the Nebuki Yosef and the Mordechai. That if we see that there's a machlokas here about whether you have to let other people use your property or not, and most of the Rishonim say that you're never a machiyav to let other people use your property, and this minority opinion of the Mordechai and others say that you may have to let others use your property. So maybe that's the machlok, because the person says, shali, shali, v'shalcha, shalcha. The question is, do I have to let you use my actual property in order to benefit? So according to most Rishonim, if he doesn't want to do that, so he's a beinoni. A tzaddik would still do it, but he's a beinoni for not wanting to do it. While according to the other opinion, Midas Dome, that's the opinion of the Mordechai, that yeah, you even have to let the person use your stuff, and you can't say shali shali. It's a very, maybe technical interpretation, but maybe that's what it comes down to. I think which we could also say, and maybe this really goes also even more fundamentally to the whole yisod of the whole sugya, is especially if we say that it's not talking about the same case, shali shali shalcha shalcha, the machlokas, whether it's beinoni or stom, but it's two different scenarios, like some of the mafarshim said. So maybe you could say, and the Meiri says a little bit along these lines, that it goes to the details of the case. And like we noted earlier, that the idea that zenene v'zel el chaser is represented in the Mishnah in Avos is not clear at all. You can interpret it to be talking about zenene v'zel el chaser, but it certainly is not obvious that's what it means. And it's shali shali v'shalcha shalcha. It's not obviously a case of zenene v'zel el chaser. Maybe it is chaser. My person doesn't want to allow any usage of his stuff that will leave him with less. So, being that that is pretty open to interpretation, so then it leads us to be able to say that it's two different ways, two different versions of shali shali v'shalcha shalcha. If a person is saying, I don't want you to use my stuff, even if my stuff will remain 100%, and there isn't going to be any loss to me at all, zeden v'zel chaser, that's midas tom. But if a person says, I don't want to share at all when I'm going to lose, so that's beinoni. Now, beinoni is an interesting word because it's very vague and subjective. And that's essentially the point, and it goes to the whole yisod of chesed and tzedakah and the like, that there's a certain subjectivity and how much a person is able to do, or how much a person feels he's able to do. And, okay, so we may not be able to judge that from the outside. But a person's godless, where they rank on the Russia to Tzaddik scale, is going to be how they're able to shift along that axis. So when a person's not giving up anything at all and still doesn't want to help, that's Midas Tov. But L'maisa, a Jew, is expected to be a Baal Tzedakah and a Baal Chesed. So you are expected to give up a little bit of what you have. How much? Okay, that's a little bit subjective. Where is the line? That's going to be a little bit subjective. So there's this whole Beinoni territory where a person can say, I don't want to give up what's mine because it's too much. So in that sense, the Mishnah reads very nicely that there's two types of Shalish Shali v'Shalcha Shalcha. So the Shalish Shali v'Shalcha Shalcha, where it's mamish lo chaser at all, that's midas tov. The Shalish Shali v'Shalcha Shalcha, where there is a chisaron, so that brings us into the big twilight zone. That brings us into the big Beinoni zone. Because we can't say you're perfect, because you are expected to give up something. We can't say you're a Rasha, because you're not expected to give up everything. So you are in that big miscellaneous zone. And your godless will be how far along the spectrum are you able to push yourself. And that's why the term Beinoni is perhaps appropriate for that, because there is some legitimacy to this, and for everyone there'll be some legitimacy to it, and you are undetermined until we figure out exactly where on that spectrum you are able to fall. And that's where the nice guy element comes in. So the Mikra Hadin is in the Shalish Shali v'Shalcha Shalcha. And the Midos part is going to be variable, and that's in the other part of the consideration. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, hope so. So just in terms of some of the practicalities, so I'll just mention one of your time, but tomorrow we'll squeeze in a little bit more together with the Parshas here. There is an interesting literature about the whole question of giving people rides and how much is one mechuyev to do that. So there are a number of tshuvas written about this. Joseph Lieberman talks about this, not the senator, the posek. Joseph Lieberman, the author of the Mishnas Yosef, has a tshuva about this, where he is responding to Rav Eliyahu Schlesinger. Rav Eliyahu Schlesinger wrote many volumes of tshuvas, but I'm not sure where he talks about this specifically, but in the Mishnas Yosef, he's responding to him without saying from where. And apparently, Rav Schlesinger wrote that it's kofron midas tov to refuse somebody a ride. And Rav Lieberman, in Mishnas Yosef, so he has a whole tshuva there where he says, no, he doesn't think it's kofron midas tov, because there could be any number of reasons why it's not good for you. And if there's any chisaron at all, so then it's not kofron midas tov. And he lists eight possible reasons, you know, in addition to maybe you want privacy, maybe you want to make phone calls, maybe you use gas, maybe he'll close the door too hard. There's all kinds of the list of eight different reasons there. He says, I'm listing this just to be Muhammad's list, that, you know, there are reasons why you wouldn't say kofanol midastom.
But that would seem to fall under, I don't think that would eliminate the kofanol midastom aspect. We seem to have already established our very legitimate excuses.
So that's, it gets still subjective. Then he ends off saying, but there is still the chesed component, so he says still should do it anyway, but as far as saying applying kofan al midas tov, they also throws in an interesting idea there that we do find in Shulchan Aruch that it says kofan al hachnasas orchim, that the towns have to have places to make sure that there is hospitality provided, and there is kfiyah for that, and he notes that there are contemporary poskim who have said that you have an opportunity for hachnasas orchim with your car. So if you put that together, then that's an interesting sushdal. But there he points there at the end that there's a little response from Rav Schlesinger to that you can find there. So he says that Rav Schlesinger back, he says, I understand what you're saying, that if you have these chisronos, so then that would change it into a not midas tov case. But would you agree with me that if there was literally nothing stopping you, if there was literally none of these problems, so then it would be kofan al midas tov? And he also says there, whoever is the Aleif Shel Chesed would not be bothered by any of these things. So there's a little bit of a subjectivity to this whole issue. And that's a part of it. But again, as far as it should be clear that as far as the Midas HaChesed, so we still want to try when it's possible to do all these things and not to be Maimid Atzmo just on the Iker Hadin. And again, that's where the other part of the Mishnah comes in. So you don't want to live as a Beinoni. You want to still push yourself towards Sitkus as much as possible. And that's where that fills in. So our agenda for tomorrow, maybe we'll say two or three more pratim about the Lachol Ma'is about this and try to say a little bit about Parshas Emor Shlishi, and continue chazering and Seder, and everyone should have a good day.